It is actually so difficult to go beyond this canto or change the mood because not only it is magnificent in beauty and rich in significance, it creates an atmosphere and a mood. One wants to drown deeper and deeper and just contemplate this wonderful meeting of the Lord and His Shakti in that sylvan groove. Well, if we speak of love, then yes. we love because love is the power which can change fate. It's the only power that can change fate. All other powers through which we try to change, whether people or anything else, it's a very temporary thing. But love is the power which can reshape our fate. This has been shown again and again in Indian thought. Not just any love, but even human love carries that briefly. But if that love can get linked with the divine, then there is no limit to what it can do. So, soon after love, we have the Book of Fate. And thankfully, Sri Aurobindo starts with someone who is regarded as the acme of bhakti in Indian tradition. It seems that no important Indian story can be complete without Narada somewhere getting into the picture. And it's an interesting story. His story is very interesting. Actually, his life is narrated in response. He is a mentor to Krishna Dwapayan Vyas, who is the author of Mahabharata. And it is because of Narada's inspiration that Vyasji wrote Bhagavat. Because in spite of writing all these books, Vyasa still felt a sense of unease. And he goes and asks Narada, what is the cause of my unease? I have written so much. Is there anything else left? What should I do? And then he says, you know, Vyasa, you are a very learned man and very intellectual and even a seer vision you have. You are a great seer and you have self-knowledge. But you know, what you have not tasted upon earth is love. You don't know bhakti. So he says, what shall I do for it? He says, write the glory of the name of Lord. Then your heart will be at peace, because without bhakti, you cannot find that inner peace and joy. So Vyasa gave birth to Bhagavat. It is actually, that's how. And Vyasa once asked Narad, how did you die in your previous birth? It's a very strange question actually, when we look at it. And then he reveals his previous life. And it's very instructive because Narada, when he was a human in his previous life upon earth, he was the son of a very low-born, low-caste maid-servant. So very interesting story. She was a Shudra who was working in people's home. But the good thing that happened in this lady's life is that she would sometimes, lot of sages and seers will come to her place and she would look after them. And in looking after them, because his father had died at a young age, Narada would be called, come, seva karo, do the service. So Narada would also serve these seers, and when they would sometimes, out of love for this little boy, they would put prasadam to the Lord and partake some and leave a little bit for Narada also. So because of that, Narada developed the seeds of bhakti, and his life otherwise outwardly was very difficult. Not only this, at a very young age, his mother also died of snake bite. So Narada was left an orphan at a very young age. But as the story goes, he was very happy that now I can contemplate upon the Supreme Lord. So he started remembering the Lord, and when the Lord granted him the vision, he said, look, you are blessed, you are my bhakta, but I have some work to be done from you. So what is that work? You have to go all across the world and spread my name. Therefore, I withdraw from you this vision, which you will get again at the time of your death. So Narada carried this anguish and sought that vision, and he spread through bhakti, because then there is bhakti. Because if there is union, the bhakti goes away. Then you are united. So this similar thing we find in the story of Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda, where Sri Ramakrishna gives him a foretaste of mukti, but says, I am not going to grant you this. I have locked the door and given the keys to Kali. So she is not going to give you. You do my work in the world, and after you have finished it, then any time you can, she will give the key and you can go into mukti or wherever. You are a free soul. So that is the interesting thing about Narada, that he goes all around the world singing the Lord's name, spreading love and bhakti. And he has once the vision, and then it is withdrawn, which he will get only after death. So after his death, he merges into the Lord and he becomes a demigod, a man divine. That is how Narada, that comes from the root Nar. And it's he seems to be on the borders of the form and the formless. Shubindu once said, I saw him on the borders of the overmind plane. So imagine what a station he has reached just by bhakti of the Lord. And mother also recounts very interestingly about Narada, and how when she was doing japa, quite a number of mantras would come to her quite naturally. So two mantras which came with a very great force to her was, she says, one of course is the Om Namo Bhagavate, which eventually stayed and became her main mantra for the transformation of the body. But the other mantra, the mother says, Narada's mantra, Narayana, 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 Narayana. This was the mantra that used to come to mother. And she uses the word Narada's mantra. And look how beautiful. Narada is the man become the status of the divine, man divine, Narada. And his mantra is Narayana, the indwelling Lord in the heart. So this is how he is shown, and he has a very interesting role to play. He at one stage in one of his works, he precipitates events. So events which are going to anyways take place, he brings them, hastens them. And this happens when he goes to the asuras and tells them about the truth. For instance, he goes to Kansa and tells him, you know what, you are going to be killed, but how do you know which one is going to be the eighth child? All the Yadavas are incarnations of gods. So it is at that time that Kansa says, okay, I'm going to kill everybody. Now Kansa doesn't realize by doing this, he hastened his doom. He almost makes the Asuras go at an accelerated speed and trip over, because that's the best way to make them arrive at their doom. Sri Aurobindo says that one of the plays, that by giving freedom to the Asura to do as he likes, actually their doom is hastened. So what he did in the process ended up eventually striking at Yogmaya. The, you know, people who talk about the woman Bhrunhatya for the girl, they should be told this story. The moment, as long as Kansa was killing the six children, male children were still okay. But the moment he touches Yogmaya, who is born as a woman, he spells doom for himself. So actually he ends up precipitating by revealing the truth to Asuras. But every time he reveals the truth to a sage or a divinely being, he actually helps to ward off a tragedy. It's a very interesting role. He is the messenger between earth and heavens. And to every time Asuras, he sells the truth, he precipitates. He goes and tells Banasur, and sure enough precipitates the event. And whenever he tells to the godly beings, he invariably helps in warding off. So it's a very interesting role he plays. And here in, of course, Savitri legend, he comes to give a foresight that Satyavan is going to die. And thereby he helps averting a tragedy. So this doesn't happen with the Asuras, because they are so much self-willed. They never resort to the right means. They resort to external means, whereas the Deva type resort to internal means. And this will come later on in this myth, in this epic, how to change fate. But first the word of fate, Canto 1, the word of fate. And incidentally, before we begin, one more thing about the mother and Narada. The mother, before she came to Pondicherry, had translated some of the verses from Narada's Bhakti Sutra. So, you know, she knew all about, and on one side Ishupanishad, on the other side Narada's Bhakti Sutra, and on the third side she had read and realized the truths of the Gita. So, we cannot imagine, many of our Indians have not, they don't even know about Narada's Bhakti Sutra. And they call themselves Bhaktas, what that Bhakti is. And we'll find here, as Shubindo describes, you will see also Narada's Bhakti Sutra coming, but in a, as is his masterly stroke, in the way of hints and suggestions, but very clear hints and suggestions. The Word of Fate, Book 6, Canto 1. In silent bounds, bordering the mortal's plane. So, as we have seen, Sri Aurobindo says, Narada is on the overmind plane. Up to the overmind, the worlds are subject to pralaya. Up to the ordinary mind to pralaya, and up to the overmind to mahapralaya. So, it is still regarded as the lower world. So, it is still regarded as martlok, what we call in Indian thought as martlok, the sphere of death, where nothing is permanent. So, he is standing on the borders of the overmind. But here, Sri Aurobindo is saying, bordering the mortal's plane, crossing a wide expanse of brilliant peace, Narad, the heavenly sage from paradise, came chanting through the large and lustrous air. Look at now, he takes us into another mood. He brings the image of Narada chanting Narayana, Narayana, Om Namo Narayana in the higher worlds. Attracted by the golden summer earth that lay beneath him like a glowing bowl tilted upon a table of the gods, turning as if moved round by an unseen hand to catch the warmth and blaze of a small sun. So there are images of earth from space, and it looks beautiful. Our earth looks like a jewel, but how the celestial beings look at earth, in different moods, in different seasons. So it's a summer earth, when there is, of course, on one side it is becoming like bronze and golden because of the sun rays, and also the harvest, and it's looking as if a glowing brown gold. So Narada is attracted, and how it is looking? Because Narada doesn't only have a gross vision, it also has the subtle vision, that like on a table, we see the scientists do this if they have to demonstrate the motion of the earth on a table and how it moves around. They see it is tilted on a table of the gods. He passed from the immortals' happy paths to a world of toil and quest and grief and hope, to these realms of the seesaw game of death with life. Across an intangible border of soul space, he passed from mind into material things, amid the inventions of the inconscient self and the workings of a blind somnambulist force. So first, how as he enters into the mortal air, the very fact of entry into earth, as the mother says, the moment you take a human body, even if you are a Jivan Mukta, you wear this robe of sorrow. That's why the very fact that the mother took a human body, that's why he says she has chosen to pass through this birth, human birth, which is a death. It's a very interesting. The very fact of being born into a obscure cloak built of this matter is to enter into death. And here death is because it makes us unconscious. The moment one wears the human body, one becomes unconscious, unconscious of the soul within, unconscious of the divine above, unconscious of the subtle truths, because that is the effect. And one becomes subject to ordinary laws like grief and death and pain and suffering, because it's ignorance. So it's a cloak of ignorance, and the moment one wears it, why wears it? Even entry into this atmosphere creates this for the celestial beings. That's why Shiva refused to enter till there is a transformed body. But he will help from above. All other gods said, I will help in the work of transformation from above. Only Krishna said, because it is his work. Shobhinda at one place says that Krishna came and did a work of the future, a work for which the earth was not ready. That's why Dwarka had to be drowned and the Yadavas destroyed. All these Yadavas were representative of some godlike beings. But the earth was not ready for beauty and love and wonder. The advent of Krishna led to a most gory war. So how it will be ready? When truth has laid its base. That is how Aurobindo says in one of his letters to Dilip Kumar Roy. But first high truth must set on earth its base. Only on the basis of truth can that high love and delight dance upon earth with divine as free beings. That's why in Vrindavan, the gopis and gopis have become like dry stouts of plants. They become like jhadis because the earth is not ready. So Sri Aurobindo comes to fulfill what Krishna has left as a promise and a symbol. So as he enters this earth atmosphere, he feels the mood, all the cries, all the weepings which the celestial beings cannot. And he also sees the inventions of a somnambulist force of inconscient. That is why very often when we expect a godlike being, okay, divine knows everything. So he must know how an airplane is made. Well, he would know the essence, but this creation is the creation of inconscient working through the human mind, which is touched by some light. So many things upon earth are basically the gifts of the inconscient. Steve Jobs may know about the iPod, and which, if one asks a saint or a realized being, okay, since you are supposed to be omniscient, tell me how an iPod is built. He may not even know how it functions. But that's not omniscience, because this doesn't come in the scheme of things. That's why when very often Aurobindo and the mother would say, tell me about the symptoms, not just the name of a disease and all these kind of medical terminology, because the divine vision is very different. He sees the truth and the essence of things, not all the truckloads of falsehood that have surrounded it. So here he sees the inventions of the inconscient and the workings of a blind somnambulist force. Below him circling burn the myriad suns. So as he sees number of suns, there is not just one sun, but many, many suns, suns of the mind, suns of the life heavens, suns of the physical earth, plenty of suns. Our sun is a very small chinna sun. So all these suns he sees circling. He bore the ripples of the etheric sea. So from the formless, to enter into the world of form, one has to first touch the etheric sea. It is there that Brahman extends himself as space. The Kshir Sagar, he is the dwelling on the Kshir Sagar by the side of Vishnu. Now he must first dip into the Kshir Sagar, and on its waves he must ride. It is the ocean of knowledge which has gone into the making of the world. It is Brahman extending into space and time, and its waves create time and its extension creates space. So first he touches that etheric sea and his ripples. What a lovely description that is. A primal air brought the first joy of touch. Because in that realm, it is a different kind of experience. It's not the way we project it crudely in our television serials. It's another kind of knowing. How in our dreams when we experience things. But here it's a different kind of knowing. He experiences contact. In that state there is oneness. But for the first time he experiences the first state of division. From the ether he descends into the worlds which are built by air. That the Panch Mahabhut, and the second thing which comes is sound or air, and that creates vibration and stir. And so he experiences that. A primal air brought the first joy of touch. The final joy of touch is on the earth, concrete. A secret spirit drew its mighty breath, contracting and expanding this huge world in its formidable circuit through the void. So the scientists say that the universe expands and contracts. It is still expanding. Since last 1,000 billion years it is expanding. And after another 1,000 billion years, it will begin to contract. So that is the one breath of the Lord. He is just drawing the breath, or maybe he is releasing the breath. And then he will draw back. So then it will contract back and things will collapse one into another and eventually go back into him. That is a great vision on the battlefield of Gita. That how he is drawing and releasing. Narada experiences that the breath of the Lord is going out into the worlds. This is how the Upanishads put it. But Narada experiences all these things as gift of bhakti, grace. And then he sees the secret might of the creative fire. And then he enters into the first forms, the luminous forms, the gods, then eventually all forms, right up to matter. Everything built by this fire, which throws itself into a dance of little tiny energy particles, and they weave forms. It is through their dance that they create forms. Displayed its triple power to build and form. Its infinitesimal wave sparks weaving dance. Its nebulous units grounding shape and mass. Magic foundation and pattern of a world. So all this boson and electron and proton, Narada doesn't have to study physics. He knows it with another vision. He sees these. In fact, this is one of the things that in tantric tantra one experiences, how this matter is built. That's how people exercise such mastery over matter. Because to an inner vision, it becomes unsealed. Even an imperfect tantra, like we have this Annie Besant and these people, Theosophy. So they described even the structure of some of the atoms. Many of them were correct. Many, the whole periodic table. Because with that vision, one can see actually the dance. Scientists do not see it. They mathematically calculate. No scientist has seen the electron or proton. It's a mathematical reality. But it is a reality nevertheless with which seers can see. And Narada is a seer which for whom all the worlds have been disclosed simply because he was blessed to take the Lord's name. Its radiance bursting into the light of stars. He felt a sap of life, a sap of death. When this withdraws, the fire builds the form, holds it for a while, then withdraws and there is death. So in every created things upon earth and in the triple worlds, there is also a touch of death. They are not permanent. And actually it is a grace, because otherwise imperfection would be permanent. So because it's, you know, must build something else. That comes later. Into solid matter's dense communion, plunging, and its obscure oneness of forms. So he sees this fire entering right into the heart of matter. And it is interesting because the same fire that burns in the sun, the same process, we know now, scientists know that it is taking place at the core of Earth. That is how at the core of Earth the magnetic poles are created. That is the base because of which all many things take place. It is because there is a fire and it's so high that iron is molten and it keeps shifting. That is how these up above tectonic plates, earthquakes, drifting, so many things take place because of that core which is full of fire. And also the same fire is found at the heart of an atom. And when scientists have discovered it, it's called Jadagni. Shubhendu speaks of it in evening talks. When he was asked about Agni, he says there are three kinds of Agni. Jadagni, which is the fire which is in matter. And then he speaks also of a solar Agni, the solar fire. And he says scientists have discovered just the first of these. The day they discover the solar fire, then they will have tremendous power to manipulate. Of course, they discovered it. So it was asked to Shivbindu why they discovered, were they ready for it? He says, no, but it had to be given to man because otherwise the Second World War meanness would have continued. So this discovery of the atom, look what energy is there. The riven atom's invisible omnipotent force to create or to slay. This is a line from Savitri. So Narada is shown all these truths. The fire that plunges into matter and builds the world. It's another kind of science. He shared with a dumb spirit identity. And at that base, everything is one. It is the same oneness. He beheld the cosmic being at his task. Still deeper, he saw that the same being who is so dear to him and so near to him, he is lying in the subconscious cavern, asleep. And in his sleep, he is creating the worlds. Mother has described this being. And obviously, Sri Aurobindo had the vision of this being. So this is the cosmic being asleep in the depths of matter. And there he is building up, inconscient. He beheld the cosmic being at his task. His eyes measured the spaces, gauzed the depths, his inner gaze the movements of the soul. So Narada is not seeing like an ordinary mortal. He is seeing the wide expanse of space, therefore he can see the events. He has that foresight, events which are going to take place. He also can see into the depths of the soul. What is taking place inside the soul? Now Sri Aurobindo describes so beautifully. He saw the eternal labor of the gods and looked upon the life of beasts and men. The gods are busy since creation because it is they who plunged with Mother Aditi. That story of the Rig Veda, and Mother has recalled, speaks about it, that when she plunged into creation with her heart of love, the gods also followed, drawn by her love. And since then they are busy in the darkness, creating beauty of form, creating beauty of life, creating beauty of thought, beauty of feelings, creating hope in hearts full of despair, giving strength where there is every reason to feel depressed, and creating strength in weakness, giving dreams of immortality. This is the work of the gods. And they are busy to ultimately build that form which can embody the fullness of the divine perfection upon earth. So Narada sees all this, that the gods are busy. This is the work they are doing. Wow, Vishwakarma and all other gods are busy building the worlds. And then what he sees, he looks upon the life of beasts and men. And then we see the outburst of compassion in Narada's heart. Love in his heart changes into compassion. Compassion is another dimension of love. When this love turns towards the divine, it becomes love, bhakti, adoration. When the same love turns towards earth and human beings and beasts, it changes into compassion. Looks from above upon this struggling life. A change now fell upon the singer's mood. A rapture and a pathos moved his voice. It's a pathos filled with, his voice was filled with compassion. That is why it carried in it a rapture. Compassion is a divine movement, so it has a touch of delight, but it also carries the pathos, looking at the fate of created things. He sang no more of light that never wanes, and oneness, and pure, everlasting bliss. He sang no more the deathless heart of love. His chant was a hymn of ignorance and fate. See, no more singing about Vishnu and his celestial abode and all the lovely thing. Is no more singing Madhurashtakam, Hasitam Madhuram, Hasitam Madhuram, Pada Madhuram, Gopi Madhuram. Everything is Madhur, Madhur, Madhur. When he comes here, he sees everything is asundar, broken, angabhang. That is the another story of Narada when he comes. This similar description to how when Narada in one of his stories sees some deformed beings. So Narada is very disturbed. He is moved again by compassion. So he says, who did this to you? Who are you? They say, we are Gandharvas, celestial musicians. Oh, is it? What, this form? Yes, we had beautiful forms. But as we inspired human beings, they distorted the music that we gave them. And all their notes were distorted. And because on earth the notes were distorted, we suffer this fate. What an interconnection. We play hard metal rock band here, and poor Gandharvas have to suffer in some kingdom. And so Narada is moved. What shall you do? No, it's beyond you. Your Veena cannot repair us. Once again the original music must flow down. Where is the original music? Shiva in his rapture must dance. Not the dance of Tandav, but Lasya. And create this world anew. So Narada goes and says, Shiva, please dance. Shiva says, just because you tell me I'll dance. I don't dance like that. I must get into a mood of dance. So who can bring you into the mood of dance? Oh, of course, your Lord Vishnu. When he is near and Brahma is near, then I start dancing Lasya. I create new worlds. Then Parvati is near. So all of them come and say, Lord, please. Then with his Lasya, he creates new worlds. And as he dances and the Gandharvas grow perfect, beautiful emotions rise in his Vishnu's heart. And Brahma says, these emotions I have never experienced. Catch it, hold it in my kamandalu, new matter for earth. He's always looking for new material, like our K.C. Anandji is looking for new matter for All India magazine. He's always looking for a new matter. So new matter in his heart, put in his kamandalu. And that will become the mighty Ganges, the all purifying Ganges. Born out of Shiva's dance, held once again by Shiva in his mighty locks much later. So Narada also now meets these disfigured beings. It's a different mood. He cannot sing now of celestial things. How can one? It's a very beautiful line of Ramdhari Singh Dinkar. Another poet also. The poet says, Kya main tyagu jagat bol mithya nij mukti ka abhilasi ban? Kya som sura swikaru main? Premi ban raha niharu mein. How can I sing of these things? Ya tyagu jagat bol mithya nij mukti ka abhilashi ban. Ramdhari Singh Dinkar writes something else. Dood dood e vats tumhara dood dhoondne hum aate hain. Hato raha ke meg panth se swarg lootne hum aate hain. Because you see that pathos. Sri Aurobindo writes this in Bhavani Bharati. That how can I sing of the mood of love when my mother's blood is being taken from her heart, a demon is sitting on her breast, how can I sing of beautiful and lovely things? I can only sing of Bhavani, Mahishasur Mardini and the dance of Kali. And he almost admonishes the youth who are busy talking of love and romance. This is not the time for that. A time will come for that. But this is not the mood. So here Narada also experiences a change of mood. And what does he sing? His chant was a hymn of ignorance and fate. He sang the name of Vishnu and the birth and joy and passion of the mystic world. So he is giving hope that look, the Lord has been born. He comes as avatar to redeem you. His touch will come. Earth, hearken, take new courage. That's one of the prayers of the mother in the very early part before coming to Sri Aurobindo. She writes a prayer. Poor, sorrowful earth, listen to the voice of the spheres. Each joy, each pang, each sorrow of your heart, each changing of seasons, each mood takes you inevitably towards him who is endless peace and bliss. She gives this hope. She's a song to earth. That look, don't worry. It's like Narada singing to earth. Look, Vishnu will come. That's why she writes in a diary. His presence is enough that a day will come when this earth will be transformed. So Vishnu also tells earth, look earth. So Narada also tells earth, look earth and its creatures. Vishnu has come number of times. He will come again. He will come as Sri Aurobindo. Hearken, take new courage. Wait patiently. So this is how he sings. He sings, he sang the name of Vishnu and the birth and joy and passion of the mystic world and how the stars were made and life began. In one of the essays of the mother, very early, it's there in volume 2, I think it's 1912. It's titled The Supreme Discovery. And towards the end, she says, to you who walks lonely and desolate, full of despair, she says, look at the lesson of the stars. When first darkness came and it divided that one light into many, many, many fragments, she says, there was no worse moment than that. And yet, how that divine has changed it into millions of glittering jewels scattered upon the sky. He has turned it into that. It was the first time that oneness got fragmented. Because ultimately we all know light is one. There is no two light. And we don't see it as one. We see it as many, many stars. But look, it has made a star-studded night. So again she says, hearken and take courage. There was no state more precarious than first when consciousness plunged into darkness. And you are there to become the bridge. And then she ends by this very powerful tribute to man. If there is no being as brittle and fragile as man, there is none as strong and mighty as he. Verily, verily, in humiliation lies the cradle. In humility lies the cradle of glory. So your moment of weakness is also the moment of is very profound truth. So Narada is singing in similar vein. So the closest that we see is these writings. So he sang the name. And the mute region stirred with the throb of his soul. Suddenly these dumb spaces became awake. Who is going? Who is passing by? Whose words? Whose rhythm? What music? How when the mother would play music, the gods would come to listen. Men will be lost whether it's Western or Eastern. Because we have to put everything in a frame. Is Savitri a pentameter or a hexameter? It's a free rhythm of the free infinite. We can put it in whatever meter we want. So look at that. And how when the mother played music, hands would come of Beethoven, please, please. Allow us. It's a delight to be with you. The gods would come. Indra and Shiva and all the great gods. We want to listen. But humans will say, oh, what is this music? This note, was it right, wrong? Mother likes Indian music, Western music. Instead of, so Narada sings beyond the seven swaras. He sang the inconscient and its secret self. He ripped the mask of inconscient and showed to her that who is hidden in this? There is the same cosmic being. It is Vishnu who is here. Its power omnipotent, knowing not what it does, all shaping without will or thought or sense, its blind, unerring occult mystery. Yes, the inconscient at its creation looks blind. Fate looks blind. Creation looks a series of random events, accident, chance. So he's setting the note for the book of fate. But don't forget, in this, the heart of creation, there is a Poon Pragya, Pragya Prasrato Purano. It is he who has extended himself in space. He who has hidden himself in the heart of time. It is he who is asleep in the atom and the stars. And because he is asleep, the inconscient does his work. And because of him, all that appears to you as accident, chance, even there a wisdom works. And therefore, it is unerring. You cannot know it now. You will know it much later. So already he is setting us into the mood of the moment. And then he sings of something which is found only on earth. Asadoma sadgamya tamsoma jyotirgamya mrityurma amratam gamya. And darkness yearning towards the eternal light. And love that broods within the dim abyss and waits the answer of the human heart and death that climbs to immortality. Narada knows this love. Krishna has taught him once when he did this, not this mistake, but he just asked Krishna casually, Lord, tell me about your Maya. I have heard a lot about it. And then he experiences Maya and he is caught in that Maya. In all the passion and beauty of human love, and suddenly one day, the time comes and Krishna takes away. Because it is his Maya, he only can take away. Shobindra says, you cannot slay Maya, because it is Lord's Maya. What we can do? You can slay Moha. You can play the game ignorantly, you can play it consciously. That's all that is given to us. So we can play consciously and then it becomes a Leela. But when we are ignorant, then this Maya is overpowering. So at the end, when all is taken away from him and Narada says, oh, so cruel, so cruel. He is forced to turn upon his heart. And there in the depths of the heart, in the dumb abyss, he beckons Krishna, tell him, Narada, I am thirsty. I want water. You went to fetch some water for me. And now do you know about Maya? Or you want another experience? So Narada knows it. That's why he sings. He sings of that love that broods within the dim abyss. The love that waits for us. Krishna, who wears so many masks and comes to us. The mother who is ever waiting with food ready for the child. What is this food? The new creation. But we love the old creation. That's why the mother writes with a touch of pathos and a divine irony. Since man refused the meal that I had prepared for him, I have offered it back to you, O Lord. And then mother explains, what is that? She says, I wanted man to become the peak and acme of creation by transmuting himself into higher kind. But man doesn't want it. So the love that broods into the dim abyss, waiting for an answer from the human heart. It is God who loves first. Someone once asked me, and in what a place? In Srinath Ji Dwara, place of bhakti of Lord Krishna. And one of the big sadhus, or he's some Mandaleshwar or some whatever. We don't understand those degrees. So he says, why God wants everybody to love? In a very bit, you know, casual way that, you know, it's not fair. Why should he want people to love? Well, he first loves. He doesn't care whether we love or not. But if we love, it connects both of us. And by this bridge, all that he wants to give us can be given. If he pours and the vessel is turned upside down, how can we receive anything? How mother says that Dilip Kumar Roy wanted this experience. I want proof, concrete proof of the divine. Give me an experience. It's okay, at so and so time you sit and meditate and you will get the experience. So Dilip Kumar Roy is sitting. Oh, I'll get some experience. And he starts feeling panting, heart sweating. He starts experiencing great amount of nervousness. Heart is beginning to throb violently. And he gets afraid. So he gets so afraid and the whole thing stops. So he writes to mother, what experience you gave me? He says, yes, I came at that right moment. But you were so full of resistance. You were resisting it tooth and nail. So the experience got translated into this way. Sometimes we all also experience headache, giddiness, throbbing of the heart, sudden sweating. Should not worry and rush to dispensary. Okay, rush to dispensary by all means. But also remember, this could well be that some resistance is there. And if we can open that part to the mother in a state of self-surrender and offering, we'll probably find the remedy much easier than by rushing to Jipmar. So we should first try that. But I'm not responsible for whatever happens afterwards. But look how Narada speaks of the dim, the love in the human heart, hidden and waiting for the response. It's a lovely line. We'll stop here and continue tomorrow.